Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating. This is installment number 21. I've been gone a couple of months. I am back. This is the first in a new series. The first series of shows was what I call empirical. I was explaining and presenting concepts and skills applicable to the art of relating, effective interaction, communication, and negotiation in private relationships, family relationships, in business relationships, in interventions if I'm on a staff of an event or a program or a company, all of the above. I'm Zach Schwartz. I'm a psychologist out here in Eugene, Oregon, and I am also your host for this program, The Art of Relating. Visit my website, DynSkills, DynSkills.com, for books and workshops and podcasts of these broadcasts. If you missed one and you want to catch it, visit the website. Or you can write to me with questions or comments at kepw.org. That's Zach at kepw.org, and I'd be glad to answer on the air or privately those questions or respond to those comments. So I was presenting empirically. Now we're going to extrapolate. In this next series, I am going to be talking about George and Rhonda. And George and Rhonda are in a long-term primary relationship. And they are an amalgam. They're a made-up couple who present a lot of the issues. And we're going to, by example, talk about the skills and the application of the skills to helping them communicate better. Remember, all the couples I work with, practically without exception, state as their treatment goal, communication. They just weren't taught or don't know or have what I call Disneyitis. And Disneyitis infection includes love conquers all, and all we need is love. And if we just love each other, that's the relatively easy part, at least at the beginning, we'll be able to negotiate and communicate next just fine. But what almost always happens is that people get more committed. They start to live together, or they have a child, or they share money. They commit to being family to each other or being connected in a deeper, stronger way. And when that happens, they have to begin negotiating and communicating about things that each may care about, things that each might see differently. They have to deal with issues of power and control. And on everything from intimacy, sexuality, child rearing, money sharing, so many things. You know, when George and Rhonda met, they were attracted. They fell in love. They were doing fun things, walking in the park, going to a movie, going out to dinner. That's easy. There's not a whole lot to fight about at that point in a relationship. There's magic dust. Our attraction takes us through any differences. That all seems cute and fun. And there's nothing to really negotiate. So there's no problem, really. That's classically the easy part. And George and Rhonda reported the same thing, that they found that part easy. It was only after about 6 months to a year that they began living together, began sharing a budget, and actually also got a dog, and we're talking about whether or not they might want kids someday. All these things came up, and that's when their skills at interacting began to be tested. They began to argue. They began to have occasional fights. Rhonda would always want to talk things out. George would get quiet and go away. They would escalate that with not a real understanding of what their anger was about and how they were supposed to resolve those issues. they would fight, and which led to them eventually to come in and seek help. So after introductory business, clerical things, doing a quick data taking intake and assessment, we agreed to a treatment plan, which of course included communication, and in the case of George and Rhonda, it also included some anger management, and we began the clinical work. And where I started with them was on values clarification, which sounds complicated maybe, but it turns out it's not the hard part, and most people in value agree, but it's good to state these things because you can fall back on them to make sure how they're interacting and what they're deciding is harmonious with those values. So, for example, one value they came to was they didn't want to have abusive behavior in their words or actions with each other. They'd like to have none of that, eliminate abuse. Another value was that they wanted to put their love for each other first and have that included in any decision they were making, in any way that they were interacting. They expressed a desire to be equals, that their joined family, as it were, in this case it was just the couple and the dog, was a two-headed dragon. In other words, neither one of them was in charge. Now, some couples I work with will say, for whatever reasons, could be their church, could be their family history, that one or the other of them, in this culture at this time, usually the guy, has the final say or is in charge. And that's okay. We can work with that as long as they both agree to it and understand what it means. But in the case of George and Rhonda, and in the case of most couples I've seen, they expressed a value that they were equals and should decide things together as equal partners. As we spoke of values, they also shared their love for the earth and the environment, and that where their resources go, where their money goes, what sort of house they live in. Anyway, it should be positive of a nurturing and healthy environment, the land, the trees, the greenery, etc. So they're equals, they want love, they don't want abuse, they want to support the environment. They come first in each other's lives. Now that was an interesting one. My spouse of 35 years, for example, is, I would say, the most important person in my life, most important relationship I have. But you understand, if I say, for example, and this comes up a lot when I work with couples, it's coming up with George and Rhonda, my hypothetical couple. If I say to my spouse, look, whenever I am not doing something else, I want to be with you, I just inadvertently made her the least important person in my life. You see why? I mean, I almost always have other things I could be doing. And that doesn't complete any quality time with her. If she's the most important person in my life, you would think I would schedule with her first and then schedule the rest of my interests and obligations as best as I could around that. That makes her the most important person. If I just take things for granted and go about my business, taking care of my needs and the in my family and my business and my community, then I find myself not seeing her much at all. So I make dates with her first. Also, if you ask me, if George and Rhonda ask me, gee, do you want to come plant tomatoes with us Saturday in the garden? I say, let me get back to you on that. I will check with my partner, my most important person, and see what's happening with our Saturday, and then I will coordinate that into my response to George and Rhonda about whether I can come plant tomatoes on Saturday. It doesn't mean that I need my partner's permission to go to it. It just means I coordinate with my primary partner. Once I decide to be in a partnership, I'm coordinating with that person where I put my time and my resources. And if I lay that out in doing this values clarification with George and Rhonda, they agree and they get it and they think that's a good idea. Will they do it? If George's friend Tom comes to him tomorrow and says, you want to go bowling Sunday? I want George to say, I'll check with Rhonda and get back to you. Not because I need her permission, but because I need to coordinate with my partner. That's sort of what being in the partnership means. When I do that with my partner, hey, my friend Danny wants to go bowling with me Sunday. What do you think? I haven't said yes or no yet. She says, I don't know, Sunday is our nephew's birthday and we're supposed to be in Portland by 2:00. Oh, thank you. Didn't think of that. Or she says, gee, we're out of money this week. The budget says we can't bowl on Sunday. Didn't think of that either. So it's a good thing in a lot of ways to check with my partner. And mostly what I think is it gives respect to the partnership and gives her the importance in my life that she deserves. So a lot of people, George and Rhonda, for example, you know, didn't think a lot about what it meant to join a committed partnership. As long as they were just dating, none of this mattered that much. But at the point at which one or the other of them asks or they agree to a commitment, a lot of discussion, I think, ought to open up between them about what that commitment means. The commitments I make to buying a car or renting a house, you know, require negotiation and documents and a bunch of things. Well, none of those commitments in my life are more important than the commitment I make to my spouse. So you would think when one of us says, let's live together, let's share money, let's buy a dog together, let's, that, wow, those invitations for a commitment deserve and should be respected by a bunch of conversation to figure out the details of what those promises, those commitments are going to entail. Now, remember, the easy part, I find in a lot of this building a relationship and building communication, is the values clarification. They usually, George and Rhonda, have little trouble agreeing about their values and how and their ideals and how they'd like things to be. I do want to digress a bit and say something here about language. Some people, like George in my example, are pretty literal. Like if George says, I clean this table in front of us 3 times today, he means this day, and he means this table, and he means the number 3. It's like if I say, when was that, George? He'd say 10:00, 1:00, and 2:30. 3 times, this table, today. And that's the way he usually thinks, and that's the way he usually selects words when he communicates. Rhonda, on the other hand, speaks more what I would call metaphorically. She's an intuitive kind of person. She's well in touch with her feelings, and she picks words that describe accurately those feelings. So when Rhonda says, I cleaned this table 3 times today, it may or may not have anything to do with this particular table or the number 3. And if George says, well, which 3 times was that? She may look at him quizzically like, what do you mean? Well, you said you cleaned it 3 times, George says. She says, well, I meant a bunch. I say what I feel. It's not literal and it's not purely analytic. It's intuitive and it's sensation. So people are different. One is not better or more correct than the other. They're just 2 among several ways to use language. And so if I want to understand Rhonda, I can't take what Rhonda says and stick it into how George computes things. That's one place that couples have a problem or get incongruous. If I truly love my spouse, and I do, and I say, I'm yours always and forever, well, do I mean for the next 14 billion years? And do I mean 24/7 when I say that? No, not exactly. What I mean, it may last forever, and it may be endless, and it may be constant, but that's not what I was saying. What I was saying was, I'm having a feeling right now of love and dedication and consistency for you. And that was just the way I said it. And believe me, I've had, well, in our example, George would come in and go, she said this, and I'm holding her to it. But what he's really holding her to is not what she intended to say, but rather what he heard put through his filters, and he may have taken it in a much different way than she meant it, without anybody lying, without anybody betraying, without anybody breaking trust. These differences can really complicate things, and we have to learn to hear each other in the context, how we think, how we form words, how we feel, so we can increase our understanding of each other. So it's not our values being different that gets us in trouble. It's more our interpretations of realities, our imperfections, our different use of languages. You see, I don't think this is simple stuff. Remember, the most complicated thing that George does in his whole day, because of vulnerability, because of the size of our human biocomputers, because of the number of issues, because of his vulnerability, what George and Rhonda do that's most complicated in their day, actually, I would argue, is interact with each other. Like, for example, they share a value, and the value is we should run our home with consideration for what's clean and harmonious in the environment. Well, they both could sign that statement. That's an easy value for the two of them to agree on. But, you know, a day later, George gets a half a banana out of the rack and at home, and he puts the other half in a baggie, and he throws the baggie in the refrigerator. And the next day, Rhonda's nose wrinkles, but she doesn't say anything. The next day, he grabs the half a banana out of the refrigerator. He throws the plastic bag in the garbage. He gets another banana off the rack, and he cuts that in half. He wants a hole. The two halves make a hole. That's fine. Puts the other half in a new bag. He puts that in the refrigerator. Rhonda says, don't do that. George says, whatever do you mean? Rhonda says, well, those baggies end up in the trash, and the trash ends up in the landfill of the ocean, and the landfill of the ocean, having those baggies, starts to toxify birds and creatures and water, and those are not ecologically sound. George says, relatively innocently, well, it's just a couple of baggies. Don't make a big deal out of it. And throws the bag in the refrigerator with the banana in it. And understand that this, what he just did, as simple as it may sound and as small as it may sound, invalidated his partner's objection, pointed out a difference not in their values, but in their interpretations of what's important and in their interpretations of reality. And she took that disregard and that resentment and stuffed it. That doesn't always happen, but remember, this is an example couple, George and Rhonda. So Rhonda stuffs it, which means it doesn't get expressed. It doesn't get resolved. She doesn't get the validation and respect that she wants for that item. And that unresolved item goes into her bag, into a, say, a muscle compartment in her gut or in her jaw, which at first doesn't seem like too much of a problem. There's room in those places, and she doesn't want to start a big argument over it. And she feels, like I say, a little hurt, a little invalidated, a little disrespected, but not the end of the world. It's just a couple of baggies, and she's not wanting to cause any more harm or make a bigger problem out of it. So she sticks that feeling aside unresolved. But you see, she has started in a very small way bomb building. And remember, the validation or respect or consideration I get in a relationship is partially my partner's ability to offer and desire to offer those things, but it is equally so, I think, a function of how assertive I'm willing to be. And we're going to talk later about assertion and consideration between George and Rhonda and what's involved in creating a balance there. So it's not one person's fault or the other. In fact, fault isn't a useful way to think about it. A more useful way to think about it is we both want respect and validation and care and mutual resolution as equals, they stated that, to happen. But easier said than done, and he could learn to be more considerate, slow down, do a lot of things we'll talk about in the next few shows to help Rhonda feel considered and respected and cared about. But equally so, Rhonda has to learn what I call healthy assertion, to notice that that happened. And I made the item relatively small on purpose, but the same applies to bigger items, that she could learn to speak up. And when she speaks up, and when she sets boundaries, and when she gains personal power, and all the things she can do to develop healthy, assertive skills, it'll be much easier for George to act in a way that's respectful, and maybe not even push those buttons in the first place. So you see how complicated this can get for George and Rhonda before they start, when they start to live together. Before they made that commitment to share a kitchen, share baggies, share a budget, they can share that common value about the environment, but they had really nothing to negotiate yet. But once they started living together, you see, the baggy on the banana thing became a thing that they then need to talk about and work out some mutual partnership, respectful solution to, so they could both feel good about each other, about the environment, about the house, about the baggies. So, not simple, is it? You see, when George lived alone, not an issue. He could profess his love for the environment, and he could keep his half a banana in a baggie, and he could change baggies every day if he wanted to. And in truth, not too many people, maybe nobody, are going to say anything about that. And he feels happy, and it's simple. But when he enters a partnership, and he's not running it by himself, and he's not in charge, then look at how many variables come up in arranging some mutually acceptable solution to the baggy question. And when there's bigger chips on the table, and I'm not saying baggies are necessarily trivial, could mean different things to different people, but when there are bigger chips on the table, like, the mortgage, or our children's safety, or our dog's health care, or our own health care, or our intimacy, or our sexuality, all the bigger items, same thing happens. Our values are similar. Our realities are different. And negotiating those differences is what all this communication business has value to help do. So George and Rhonda come in to work on their communication, of course, and some anger management. And we start with values clarification and find out that that's not where there's much problem. Their values, as stated, are very similar. But their interpretations of reality, their use of language, their understanding of what a partnership is and how to share as equals, those things start to get very diverse between the two of them and have to be sorted out in the next maybe for the rest of their lives. But certainly, I'm optimistic things can improve. There's lots to learn and lots to apply that can make this much more peaceful and coordinated and capable for this couple to move forward. And remember in all this that agreeing to these concepts or learning these skills is great, and that's part of the process. But the most important thing for George and Rhonda to do is to integrate, to actually start using these skills, to change their personal habits, to use their free will to integrate these skills and concepts into what they really do. And that takes work. They're changing habits. They're learning how to not be impulsive, not go too fast. God knows how many times a session when I'm working with George and Rhonda, I will say, wait, slow down, take a breath, think about what you're saying next. So as the great Lebowski said, the big Lebowski, the dude said, as I remember it, it's complicated, dude. Lots of variables, ups, downs, ins, outs, things to consider. Anyway, the next bunch of shows are going to be the continuing story of George and Rhonda, and we're going to move to the next issue. The first was values clarification and maybe learning a little bit about each other and how they use language. The next is timeouts and pausing the process. So remember, please, to visit the website, dyinskills.com, D-Y-N-S-K-I-L-L-S, and take a look at what else we got in this relating art of relating area. And send your questions to Zach at kbepw.org, and so we can dialogue about some of these things. It's great being back. Great talking to you. Go slow and stay grounded. To be continued. This is complicated, but it's not hopeless. Stay optimistic. These skills are learnable. I've seen lots of people have their relationships improve, and as they apply these things to get along better. The point today was just that values are usually harmonic. The mechanism for which we interact as partners is what is complicated and takes the work to do. Oh, and one final note about conditioning. Remember, you can take any concept or skill and start to build it into your repertoire. Change how you say or do things by connecting what you believe is a good idea or a good skill with feelings and sensations that you already automatically have and notice. So when Rhonda, for example, with the banana and the baggies, feels that disrespect, small thing as it may be, her nose wrinkles a certain way, and she always notices that. And when her nose wrinkles like that, she wants to remember to stop, to ground, to negotiate that moment differently, to not create baggage. Plenty for her to do, and plenty for George to do as well, to learn to react to that in a positive way. So keep the faith. This is doable. Remember the website and remember the radio station. And thanks. Welcome back. And we'll see you in a week.